to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I have a whole load of excitement for you. You know I get very enthusiastic about all things social media. I actually do think that Twitter changed my life, and when I look back I think about the tipping point for me in terms of the Creative Pen site and also for my own writing sort of career, I guess I can call it now. Twitter really was the point where I made all the changes. The people I've met on Twitter, the traffic it's given me, the profile it's given me. Anyway, yes, today in our interview, I talked to Dan Blank, who is at wegrowmedia.com. And Dan is also massively enthusiastic about social media. So we're going to talk about that today in the interview. It also wonderfully coincides with the release of my latest mini course, which is a multimedia, you know, sort of little short course that you can do in, you know, probably a day if you go through all the exercises and everything. But essentially, it's social networking for authors and writers. And you can find all the information at thecreativepen.com/social. And there, basically, I go through, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Goodreads, all the rest, and video of behind the scenes and audios and interview with the lovely Alexis Grant from Socialexis. So you can basically get all of that information at thecreativepen.com/social, and that is just $39.99 US. Okay, so that's kind of my new little course for you. And in terms of an update, well, it is October. It's actually October the 7th, 2011 as I speak. And the weather's just turning in England. It's becoming autumn, which is marvellous because in Brisbane, where I've been living for the last 4 years before I moved back to London, there never really was an autumn. It was kind of the, you know, there was a winter, there was a summer, but most of the time it was just sunny and all the trees were green all the time. And here, the leaves are changing, the squirrels are out with all the, we call them conkers here, Americans call them horse chestnuts. So that's quite cool. I'm really enjoying autumn, it's getting chillier. If you do read the blog, I've recently moved full-time into the sort of doing an author entrepreneur life full-time, which is quite fun, hence the release of a lot of these courses as well, to try and pay the rent. But no, I'm really enjoying it. What I'm finding is that I'm starting to think about things I haven't thought about for a long time. I'm getting into meditation, which is interesting for me because I'm always one of, you know, you probably guess, I'm one of these quite fast-paced, intense people who works, like does stuff a lot. So just sitting and meditating is interesting, but I'm finding it very helpful for the fiction writing. I am around 65,000 words into Prophecy. I know the whole story, I just have to bash out probably another 15,000 words. But I've kind of got myself a little bit tangled up. I don't know if I've bitten off more than I can chew in terms of my themes. I've got pretty deep and meaningful in terms of some neurotheology ideas around whether faith can be manufactured. I'm also using something called the Devil's Bible, which actually does exist, but I'm obviously exploding that into a big sort of plot. I'm really enjoying it though. I'm really finding that this second novel is easier in some ways, but I'm obviously making it harder for myself because I'm getting more into the craft, more into trying to make it a better novel than Pentecost. What I should say though, excitingly, Pentecost is still in the bestseller lists in Amazon.com and .co.uk, so I'm really happy about that. Thank you for your support. And of course I will be sort of soliciting for Prophecy early reviews at some point if you like the thriller genre. Yeah, so that's kind of, oh, one thing I was going to share as well. I've started going to the London Library as part of my writing side of things. I've got the little brochure here. It's quite exciting. But some of the people who have written in the London Library over many years include Charles Darwin, Charles Dickens, Arthur Conan Doyle, Virginia Woolf, T.S. Eliot, E.M. Forster, Agatha Christie, Winston Churchill, John Betjeman, Bruce Chatwin, who I love. Bruce Chatwin's like one of my heroes. All kinds of people, so I'm quite excited to be writing in the London Library. It's in St James's Square in London. It's a beautiful place. You can obviously Google it, and I'll try and get some surreptitious video at some point. But it's I just feel the need to be surrounded by other people who are working. I think that's probably because I've worked in an office for the last 13 years. I do need to get out the house. And also I find if I immerse myself for a good chunk of time in the writing, I can get more words done. So I got 4,000 words done in sort of a session at the library the other day, and it just felt like a very good immersive time, and I went past the point of where I normally would go when I'm working from home. So that's interesting. That's probably part of the psychology of this, but being an author entrepreneur, I mean, I'm having to balance my time between writing the fiction, which is obviously really important for me, because at the moment I get checks every month from Amazon. In fact, several checks a month, which is nice because you get one from amazon.co.uk and one from amazon.com. So that's pretty good. So I need to keep doing that, and I know that the best way to sell more books on Amazon is to have more books on Amazon. Which we must all know about. I will get excited about the new Kindle stuff in the interview, so I won't go on about that now. But just also to tell you about some other things. So I've recently been doing some webinars. Really have been brilliant to connect with people on the webinar series, and the feedback is really good. If you haven't been on a webinar before, it's an online seminar where you join, you click a link at a certain time, and you can see my screen and my slides, and you can hear my voice, and it's basically a way of teaching that works across the whole world, and it's extremely good. So I've been doing a couple of webinars for other things, but Ros Morris, who has been on the podcast before, the wonderful Ros Morris from nailyournovel.com, who has recently released her novel, My Memories of a Future Life, which is fantastic literary fiction. Ros and I are going to do a webinar series. Basically, how to write your novel. I guess it's sort of aimed at people who are writing their first novel, who want to write a novel, who want to join NaNoWriMo this year, National Novel Writing Month. Ros has written 11 books, 8 of which are bestsellers, as a ghostwriter, and obviously one of her own under her own name. So she brings a sort of pro approach to the whole enterprise. She's also written Nail Your Novel, which is a book for writers, and we'll be using that and going through several webinars on how to write your first novel. So you can find more about that at thecreativepen.com/write novel, all one word. So yes, /write novel. And we're basically going to do three webinar series of 90 minutes each. It's going to be quite hardcore over a period of about 6 weeks, and we're going to start in November. So if you're going to do NaNoWriMo, it will fit in nicely. We're going to basically split them. So Ros will do two sessions, I will do one session. Because I guess I feel like I'm very close to how it feels to write a first novel, and I now feel, I guess I'm now able to say I'm a novelist because Pentecost is selling well. It's it's an Amazon bestseller, it's doing well. So I feel like I can now say, okay, let me tell you what I learned. And some of the things that I learned in writing that first novel are so close to me that I remember them really well. So I want to do this course before I forget how it feels like to do those things. And of course, as I said, Ros brings hardcore knowledge and craft based on years of experience. So all the details of the sessions are, as I said, at thecreativepen.com/write novel, and you can also book there. We do only have a limited number of spaces because obviously the webinar series, we need to have a manageable number. And all the dates and times are on that page. It will be $99 for the whole 3 sessions. So I think that's pretty good value considering how much we both charge now for our hourly rate. So that's quite exciting. So that's $99 and limited places, and you can book now for that. And that starts, the very first one session will be the 14th of November. So join us, please. It's going to be exciting. I'm really enjoying these webinars and actually interacting with people more directly than, you know, this type of thing. I just talk and you listen at some point. And obviously videos and blogs, you just, it's not so much discussion, whereas the webinars are really good interaction and I'm really enjoying them. Okay, enough waffling, I think, and on with the interview. Very exciting with Dan Blank. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm interviewing Dan Blank. Dan is the founder of We Grow Media, an online media consulting and training company. He works with writers, authors, editors, and journalists to build their online media and marketing skills and engage their communities in fun and meaningful ways. So welcome, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you on the show. And, you know, you're involved in so much of this new media stuff. And I wanted to start by, you know, getting really excited about the new Kindle announcements. And the rest of us out here in, you know, not in America, are looking at this as, you know, something very exciting. But what's the gossip in the publishing community? You know, how's the feeling in the US?
Well, I mean, we're trying to figure out what the ripple effects are for the business standpoint. So everyone's comparing, like, well, Kindle versus Apple. And to me, it's either, you know, a bit more like the Microsoft versus Apple thing of the 80s or even just the retail environment here, where Amazon is clearly taking this sort of Walmart approach of they will own a huge segment of the market because the prices are so much lower and they have access to this wonderful supply chain of products and services. That's not Apple's game. Apple is doing something very different, and they're doing it very well. So the interesting ripple effect for me is how it affects Microsoft and BlackBerry and Nook and Kobo and all these other things, and then what that means for publishers and what it means for authors, this sort of, you know, ripple, you know, trickle-down effect of that for everyone else. So there are huge things happening. This is monumental, and it's just exciting to watch.
Oh yeah, I think I'm more excited about the cheaper ones, the $79 one. Do you think this is a tipping point? Have we reached that time?
I mean, the day after Christmas this year is going to be insane in terms of number of downloads, and I think that from an author perspective, absolutely. When you have an $80 e-reader from, you know, the top company producing them, it's not some third party also ran. This is Amazon. That opens up such an avenue for writers and authors. It can't be ignored anymore. And what you have are companies like Amazon putting their foot firmly down on the gas pedal, saying, we are going into this, and all of you are coming along whether you like it or not.
And I was stunned at that graph that Jeff Bezos had, you know, with the sales literally went straight up. It was amazing, wasn't it?
It's incredible, yes.
Exciting times. Okay, so you also have many clients in the publishing industry, as in you've worked with publishers. You know the people that I guess up until recently we were all clamoring to get to. You know, and some people are still clamoring to get to. Let's make that clear. But you know, how is the feeling there? With, you know, because you really, I think you really know that segment of the market. Have they changed? Have they changed their point of view on self-published books, on social media?
I mean, things are still evolving. Part of it is a resource issue. Part of it is, you know, when you're someone who has formerly been in power, there's a lot of challenges in terms of what you gain from this and the safety net of that. So you have even like the app world or ebook world, something like that, where they're tiptoeing into it because there's no proven model, because they're going to do an experiment, invest a lot of time, and may not see the financial return on investment. So what you tend to have is that every publisher, you know, quote unquote, gets it. Everyone talks about ebooks and digital and how the self-publishing world is affecting things. They have people on staff who are focused on this. The question is the entire organization shifting? Is it just one or two people with very few resources driving that? And then how are the decisions being made? Is it just a quarter by quarter decision of saying, how are ebooks doing? Oh, they're not doing as well as print. We're putting more resources to print. Or how they sign people up or how they work with authors. So what you have is that people get it. They talk about it. But are they moving quickly enough? And again, you know, someone like Amazon, who's making all kinds of inroads into deals with authors and starting their imprints, all these different things, where they're moving very aggressively. They don't have that legacy to uphold or even the pride to uphold of saying, this is who we are in the world. We have to protect that. They're saying, this is who we can be. It's a very simple difference, but it's profound in terms of how that really affects an entire culture of an organization.
And I guess when we talk about that speed, I'm wondering at the moment, because I feel like I've been talking about this stuff for years. You know, I've been on Twitter 2.5 years. You know, I know you have. You know, we're blogging, we're doing all this stuff. The people who haven't actually started this yet, so people listening going, have I just missed the boat? Like, if you haven't started on Twitter yet or you haven't started a blog yet, is it too late?
No, I mean, the funny thing is that all of this stuff that we talk about with social media and platform building and Twitter, the underlying value is very basic. It's the idea of, do you or don't you want to understand who your audience is? Do you want to be talking to them? Do you want to evolve channels where you can communicate them to those people? Do you want to constantly learn how to hone your message and what engages people, what doesn't? Do you want to learn how to sell books and how to not sell books or how to get a speaking gig or whatever it is your goal is with your writing career? These are all underlying values. You can look at something such as a blog or Twitter. These are just people using a different tool. The people haven't changed. Their motivation hasn't changed. Their pride, their value, all these different things are the same. We just have another opportunity to leverage it in what I think is a more direct way. And for me, that's the basics. So the people, you know, in the last maybe 12 months or so, they've talked about, oh, blogging has waned because of social media. And in some ways, they're correct. If you look at a little graph, you know, they're probably right. But if you're someone who's sharing wonderful content, you're dedicated, you're connecting with people, it doesn't matter what the trend is because you're always bucking the trend. Most people don't have the sense of commitment, the sense of strategy, the sense of passion that anyone out in this audience has. And it really comes down to a choice of, are you willing to make that sacrifice? Are you willing to kind of consistently do the work to find connections, to build a body of work? And to me, that's what a blog is. It's you're building a body of work. And it's something that to me is, I like focusing on not, you know, we're going to have a bestseller, but you're building a writing career. This is something that defines who you are. It defines what your legacy is. It is a body of work that evolves over time. And yes, it could be different areas such as printed books or ebooks or blogs or tweets. And it's just a different mindset. And I think that it absolutely is an opportunity because only 1% of the people will ever really take it seriously. The rest want it, but they also want other stuff. Or they want it as long as they can sleep 8 hours a night. And they, you know, they don't want to sacrifice enough. So it's always that choice for any of us. If you're willing to make the commitment and sacrifice, it absolutely is an opportunity.
I cannot sacrifice my sleep. But I sacrificed my TV and income. I went to 4 days a week in order to build, you know, the whole platform thing. So I totally agree with you. You have to find the time from somewhere, don't you, if you want to connect. No, but that's another question. People are going, well, you know, you've just said that authors have to connect with their readers. You know, what do you say to people who are too, you know, they're too shy or they're too worried about social media, about safety, privacy? You know, what do you say to them?
I mean, that's a very personal issue, and there's no right answer. You have to draw the line that you're comfortable with. What I would often say is find small ways to experiment, where you draw a line saying, you know, maybe you're not going to talk about your family or an aspect of your life or something from your past. But find a little way to put something out there to see what happens. So I'm working with a group of writers right now, and one of them just gave this wonderful piece of feedback to myself and three other people in class because of what we shared in either, you know, a forum post or in a piece of homework we did or in a blog post. What they were saying was, you know, I was very sheepish about really putting myself out there for all the reasons all of us, we all have a history. Mm-hmm. We all have very complicated emotional connections to that history, and we don't talk about that, but we do. And what she was saying was that I've looked at what each of the four of you have shared, how you've put yourself out there, and it really illustrated to me the value of that, of how my connection to you has grown because of it, how my understanding of you. And then she reflected on what that meant for her, of how she can start realizing what the value is of risking yourself by putting yourself out there. I can't tell you that everything will be okay, because I'm not going to write the way you are. I don't have the background you don't, out of the thicker, thin skin that you may or may not have. So oftentimes it's a matter of try and experiment. Try to put yourself out there and see what happens. And just sort of work on that a little bit. Make it safe for yourself to get a little bit past your comfort zone, but not risking something where you're job is on the line, your spouse is going to hate you, or something that's a very sensitive part of your self-identity is now suddenly at risk.
Mm. No, that's good advice. And just, I guess, following on from that, you and I both do videos like this and audios, and your blog now has, you know, a lot of video interviews. You know, do you recommend doing audio and video to authors, and why do you think that's effective?
I think it's effective for a couple of reasons. One is it's a human connection. It's seeing someone's face is very powerful. So, you know, you build a connection with them that when you see them again or hear their name again, instantly there's that connection. Audio is powerful too. I listen to a lot of interviews on my iPhone while I'm taking a walk, that sort of thing. So this person's voice is literally in my head for an hour at a time every time I listen to their podcast. So it's very typical where I'll email them as if we're best friends, and they're just sort of just hearing from me as if we haven't spent 40 hours together like I feel that we have. And then in terms of putting yourself out there, again, it comes down to you're doing something a lot of people won't. I was always the family photographer. So at my job, at home, I've always had a camera. I've always just snapped away. A lot of people are very sensitive to having their photos taken. Mm-hmm. I think Facebook has changed that. I don't see nearly as many people who won't allow me to take their photo in a regular social setting. Video is the same way. You're connecting, but there's very few people that are comfortable hearing how they sound. You know, most people have, again, complicated relationships with their face, with their hairline, with their crow's feet, with a pimple, with a lisp, with all these different things. And we can kind of mask in a lot of ways of everyday life because it's not recorded. We're not editing it. We're not saying, I'm going to publish this for the world to see. If you can get over that to a certain level, you're doing what 9 out of 10 people can't do. Mm-hmm. You're putting yourself out there. You're pushing yourself a little bit further. And all of this is about communicating. You're communicating your purpose and your value. You're learning to be better at that. You're learning, you know, how to connect with an audience. You're learning how to kind of have feedback with them. These are skills that you can use again and again. And it's really the foundation. I mean, you don't meet a lot of very successful people who just say, I had a great idea and it took off and I don't know who's using it or why they're using it. I don't know how to build a supply chain. I don't know how to market it. It just took off. And it doesn't happen to anyone. It was a lot and a lot of work. And that was part of, I think, Malcolm Gladwell's book, of the idea that we think that success is instant because we want to think that one day we'll just be famous. We'll just be successful. All of our issues will go away. And that's not how it works. And in fact, usually that causes a lot of problems. You look at studies about people who won the lottery, about how it affected their life. Yeah. And often it's very negative. There was a lot of divorce, a lot of family turmoil, a lot of losing the money because they didn't earn it, didn't know how to leverage it. A lot of hard choices, broken relationships. So it's not really a good thing to have instant success. It is good to work at it and slowly build to it. So you become the person who has earned that.
Mm. And yeah, and just and coming back to the video and success there, it's kind of that, you know, that overnight success after years of work. And I've been looking at John Green. Do you know John Green?
I don't think so.
Oh, well, you've got to look at John Wick. Okay, he's this YA novelist, and he just, his book isn't even finished. He's writing it at the moment or something, and he made number one on the NY Times bestseller list. And then you check out his video blogging. He's been video blogging for like 4 years now, but now he's got like 15 million hits, and he's got 150,000 subscribers and 1.5 million people on Twitter. And he is talking to the teens. Now, I hate his videos. They're awful, but they're, you know, for teenagers. And they love it, you know. They talk about kissing and stuff like that. And I was just... and then I look at what we do, you and I. We're quite serious, aren't we? You know, well, we are. You know, we do serious interview stuff. And I just thought, it takes all sorts, doesn't it? In video, I think you don't have to be fake. You can just use your... personality in all of this stuff, in all of social media.
Definitely, you're using that as a guideline. You're also understanding what your purpose is, who your audience is. So I was speaking with YA author Jackson Pierce, who does a lot of video, and her videos are kind of in between. And I was looking at her very early videos and her more recent videos, and you see a marked difference in how she positions her body and how she talks and how she edits and how, you know, everything just gets better and better because she learned how to communicate more effectively, how to be more of herself. Mm. And there's a lot of personality in there. There's a lot of Jackson Piercy kind of stuff. And that's exactly why you watch it. You either love it and it builds you a closer relationship, or you don't. You just walk away from it.
Mm. No, absolutely. Now, a lot of the stuff we've talked, you know, we normally talk about is quite established, but I wanted to ask you about Google+. Because, of course, nobody has enough time for all the social networks that already are, and now we've got another one. Mm-hmm. What do you think about Google+? Is it something we should be investing our time in? And what type of authors, you know, could it be useful for?
I mean, the feedback I've been getting from other people on Google+ is that it's a very engaged community, so that when they post something on Twitter or Facebook, they might get a couple little comments, but on Google+, they'll get a real conversation. Part of that is that it's still small, so you have a lot of more early adopters who are very engaged. So when you go to a private party, there's something about being a private party than this sort of open forum with millions of people, that there's something about being on the inside. And even though it still has millions of people in it, there's still insideriness to it. Then the nature of how it works is that you can do longer posts and share things differently. You have the video hangouts, which are really cool. So there's a different tool set that's a mix of Facebook and Twitter, that sort of thing. But it is another thing. And I struggle with that, and as I'm sure you do, about how do I engage with Google+ in a meaningful way, and then Twitter in a different meaningful way, and YouTube in a different meaningful way. There isn't really an easy answer than to find, you know, that what you're trying to do here is connect with people. Mm. So you have to see who within your network is already in there, and what are they doing, and who else is in there, and how can we be leveraging this differently? Mm-hmm. You know, some people like to just kind of wait until everything is big enough and then jump in. Other people want to be an early adopter, and that's a personality difference. That's fine. Mm-hmm. The only danger I see with Google+ is that for Google to keep it around, it has to scale dramatically. And it's doing fine. And you always have to wonder, you know, what is their internal benchmark? Where if we don't have 5 trillion people on it, it's not a success. Do they have that measure somewhere that in 2 or 3 years, like, you know, like Google Buzz or like something else, where if it's not profoundly huge, will they just stop developing it? Will they eventually kill it? Mm. Twitter, Facebook, they're already huge. And chances are they'll stay huge, or, you know, there will be a decline that we can all see well ahead of time. Google+, we don't know yet. We don't know what their internal benchmark is. We don't know if it'll go the way of Google Buzz or Google Wave.
Mm. Yeah, it's really hard, you know, because, of course, I network, you know, with people like you and, you know, I guess people who are already into social media. But we've got to remember as authors, I guess, that we're trying to get people to buy our books. So at the moment, I'm kind of saying, well, how many people are on Google+ that will actually buy your book? I don't know.
We all buy books.
Yeah.
and it's too, you know, it's a funny balance, is that we all, you know, we all have this hat on of saying we want to go where the people are. Mm-hmm. But in every time you've got to think about how are you differentiating yourself, either by where you're hanging out, by what you're sharing, by how you're sharing. So you can view it, you know, one of two ways, either an opportunity to really differentiate myself because it's still forming, or that it's not for you because you need a bigger platform. And the pros and cons of that will probably be different for every individual.
Mm, yeah. And then, you know, your site is very focused on the platform and the, I guess, the business side of being a writer. And of course, one of the questions I'm sure you get asked as well is, how do you balance the time between writing and marketing? Mm-hmm. So what's your feeling on that? You know, how do people do that?
I don't really believe in balance. When we talk about success of really building an identity, really having a writing career, I think the idea of balance is what screws a lot of people up, is that they think that it's possible to go to their day job and come home at 5:30 and have a nice dinner with family and then spend time with your wife. Then I'll do the dishes and then I'll write and then I'll do social media. And most things aren't going to work that way. You know, there is no sense of balance. What I believe in is obsession. That you want this so badly that it just, you're always thinking about it, you're always walking around and finding ways to talk about this. And that because you're doing that, opportunities come up throughout conversation. So I have a friend, Barbara Vey, who writes a blog about romance novels and women's fiction for Publishers Weekly. And she is this amazing lesson in just passion, because you can't sit anywhere with her. Any scenario, she will be talking to people around her about books. What they're reading, why do they read, do they like the Kindle, do they like books. She's always asking people things. She's always showing them what she's doing. And opportunity just finds her because she's just living her life. She doesn't have some big strategy. She's living her life as someone who is passionate about reading, and she absolutely loves people who read. So if she goes to the hospital and she comes out, she's going to tell me what every nurse and every doctor likes to read. She's going to tell me what book she gave them. She's going to tell me how she recruited one of them to guest blog for her. And it's that kind of passion where it's not, she's not looking for balance. She's trying to live a life that is full of purpose and filled with the people and topics that she cares about. So to her, this is just living. It's not, I've segmented my job and my book and my career and my family. This is just who she is.
Mm. No, I like that. And that kind of answers the question too, how I feel about social media, which is, it's not something you do separately. It's something that is part of your daily life, isn't it? Really? It just, there isn't, like you say, an hour where you sit down and do it.
Definitely. And that can be different for everyone. There are days where I'm not very active on Twitter this week. I have a very busy week. And some weeks I find that I'm driven to be discussing news and I'm on it a lot where I read a lot, but I'm finding I'm not sharing that much. And it's something to say, you know what, Dan, that's okay. I don't have to be on this rigid schedule where I'm always doing something. This really is how I feel this week. So let me just have that reflect what I'm doing this week.
Mm, no, good point. So I also wanted to ask you about your author entrepreneur idea, because I also feel this very much. Can you explain what you mean by author entrepreneur?
It's the idea that really to be a successful author, for most people, not for everyone, there's examples on either side, is that you have to have an entrepreneurial spirit. You have to be willing to take the load on your shoulders that no one's going to make this happen for me. I've got to really think about this, not just from writing the book, but learning how to make the connections, understanding the process, making very critical decisions about what roads you want to take in your writing career. Mm-hmm. So some of this is a very marketing aspect, that you are going to engage in social media, that when you put your book out there, you are going to look at data about where it's selling and how it's selling. You are going to build relationships with people who can help further your career or that you're passionate about or are like minds. That you're going to think of this as you would think of any big decision in your life. When someone buys a house, when someone moves or they change jobs, they're looking at it in a very broad spectrum. They're saying, do I want this job? Is it something I'm passionate about? Is this company healthy? Where will it lead to? Who else works there? How much money they pay me? What are the benefits? How long is the commute? So they're balancing all these different things. Some are very business-like and some are very personal. And they make a decision based on that. And I think that if you really want a long-term career as a writer, that chances are you have to approach it that way. You've got to be very realistic about the fact that, well, this is a business. No one is giving you a gift of being published or giving you a gift of writing a book. Is that they're people who want to be amazed, people who want to earn profit from you, who want to partner with you for mutual benefit. And the more you understand that, the more you have this skill that maybe if you put out a book and it doesn't do that great, that the next one will be better, and the third will be better than that, and the fourth one will be even better. And that along the way, you're getting better at marketing, at writing, at time management, at building connections, about all these different things, that you're becoming an entrepreneur around your writing career.
Mm. And yeah, I guess a lot of people don't seem to want to talk about the money aspect. And I feel this, you know, you get the Joe Conrath, obviously, who puts out his, you know, stuff, and he puts it out there. Dean Wesley Smith, you know, John Locke, they're being honest about it. And I guess I really respect that, but there's been quite a lot of backlash. You know, what is this issue with people talking about their sales figures and income? Do you think that is the lack of business sense?
No, I think that's, well, I think it's two things. One is that I'm amazed by what they're doing, because nowhere else in our culture do we do that. You and I on this call are not going to talk about what we earned last year, what our salary was, what our bonus was, hourly. You know, we're not going to talk about our 401k, how much money is in the bank. People don't do this, not just in publishing, in any industry. It does not happen in normal conversation, because people have a very big emotional reaction and identity issue around money. It is just too sensitive. It's sort of like talking about politics and religion, where you should be able to have a rational conversation around it, but it's so fraught with passion and all these other issues that they don't. So the fact that they're doing it is incredible to me, because what it means is that they are sharing a bit of their secret sauce. Mm. But they're breaking that barrier where they're saying, this is what I earned, and this is the specific ways that I did it. Now, as part of that marketing and part of that, how they're building their own platform, definitely. And you have maybe about 10 people and they're doing it. And the more that rush in, the less of an effect it will have. I'm a big fan of honesty, because I feel like when you share data, when you share what's really happening and saying, this worked, this didn't. And when it comes down to a basic metric, a lot of us define success by money. Not because we're greedy, but because we have to feed our family. We have to pay for, you know, rent or a mortgage. We have to buy food. It's something that we don't talk about, but we should. Mm-hmm. And a lot of writers say, I want to be a writer. I want to be published. And underlying that is the idea that I want it to support me. And then when you talk about money or business or marketing, they, you know, some of them feel like, oh, there's art over here and there's commerce. And don't talk to me about commerce. You're wrong. You know, I'm an artist. But they don't realize that implicit in their dream is the fact that this will give them money, that this will support them, and that's a fair trade-off. So I love the honesty of what other people are doing with that, because I feel like it gets it, all of this sort of the BS, for lack of a better term, around what works or publishing, it's wiped away, because we are defining success in some ways as to whether or not you can earn a living. It's not the only measure, but we want to have a viable career. We want to be producing great art. We want to be giving back to the culture. But for a lot of people, in a lot of ways, money is somehow tied into that. Maybe it's 10%, maybe it's 80%. And not talking about it is just a way to ignore something that is the elephant in the room.
And I posted when I made 10,000 sales, you know, I was like, I want to be honest like that, but I mean, I'm not going to do it every week, but I'll probably do 50,000 and 100,000, because as a new novelist, I think that's important. And I guess I didn't really have any benchmarks, because the industry is so shuttered. I didn't even know whether 10,000 was all right, or whether, you know, getting these checks every month, whether they were big enough. You know, so it's so critical for new authors, I think, to have this stuff. I realise we're going on a bit, but I wanted to. Is that all right? Yeah,
I have time. Yes, I'm good.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I wanted to ask you. I'm very excited about the Kindle moving into India. I think it might be because I'm British. I don't know how the Americans feel about India, but we have a lot of Indians in England. We have a very close relationship in many ways. And I just see this international sales being huge for self-published authors who can price their books lower, because of course you can't sell at a much higher price in India, but the market is huge. What do you think about that?
It's just mind-blowing to think about the exponential ways the market is increasing. So I was talking to Bob Mayer in an interview, and he was talking about, he has like 36 books out, and multiply that by the 4 or 6 platforms he's on. It's not about the amount of work in it. They say now they're preparing for international. So they've got to convert all these different files for every platform. But the size of the audience is so much bigger. Mm. So you now have an individual author thinking about that. You know, we have this already established in the music world, in the movie world, and it's always been a rights issue in the past, or a language issue, or a supply chain issue, distribution issue, and now that's being wiped away. So I think it's very forward-thinking and very smart for people to think about that, about what is that audience about, how do you build your avenues into that, and what do you need to be doing as an author to be tapping into that audience, and is it important to you or not? Is that something that you value? A lot of people only value getting a review on the Today Show or New York Times bestseller, the sort of thing that is a certain indicator of their success. It's a huge opportunity. And that, again, is why Amazon is so key in that, is that they're just this big supply chain of products everywhere in the world, and it's only growing. Mm-hmm. So the more they do that, the more opportunity there is to open that up. We all look back at history of saying, you know, when there was the gold rush, when they met the automobile, all these big times. That's happening right now for digital media, and especially for authors and publishers. So it's not easy. It's not a clear roadmap. That's what will put off 99% of the people. Mm-hmm. The 1% who say, I see where this is going, I'm willing to take a risk, are the ones who more likely than not will find that kind of exponential success that we all hope for.
Mm. Oh, I'm so excited.
Exactly.
Okay, well, look, I'd really like you to tell people a bit more about what you do and what your site offers people as well.
So I work with a lot of writers, nonfiction, fiction, memoir, and a lot of what I do is help them, I call it build their author platform. It really is, how do they structure their professional career? How do they really set things up to have a long-term writing career? So part of it is very much about, you know, mapping out your goals, about mapping out what your resources are, what your brand is, who you hope to be engaging, how to engage them, then all the obvious stuff of how to leverage social media, how to market your book, how to get it out there. So it really is building giving them a foundation for building that career. These people are saying either they're changing the course of the writing career they've published before, or they're just getting started, or they're, you know, they were, you know, traditionally published before, now they're going self-published or vice versa. So it really is about giving them the strategy and the tactics, the sort of underlying business and marketing sense they need to really grow.
Mm. And where can we find you online?
My site is wegrowmedia.com. I've got a blog there. I teach a lot of online classes, so I talk about them there. On Twitter, I'm at Dan Blank. That's DanBlank. Those are probably the two primary places to find me, and then all the other social media places you can find me. But starting there is probably the best bet for me.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Dan. That was great.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan. So,
thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!